Good evening, everyone. How you doing tonight? Good, pretty good. More good over here than over here. That's all right. Maybe this side of the room is colder than this side of the room. I'll remember to bring my winter coat next time for church. My name is Brady. I'm one of the teaching pastors here. I heard that last week was exciting, that it was thumping, that it was going crazy. If you weren't here, there was a wedding reception next door, and there was some serious bass going on. And I'm just so glad that the Spirit of God didn't move Taylor into the Cupid Shuffle up here on stage. Like that just did my heart good, knowing that did not happen. It's always so good to be here. It really is. This week I had an interesting epiphany dawn on me. My car is sick, and so it's not starting right now. So my wife let me drive her car around last night, and I was driving around, and it hit me as I was sitting there in the car, wearing my cardigan, in a powder blue convertible bug. I've got a little Yorkie poo princess, and I thought to myself, perhaps I need to rethink my decision-making paradigm, because how did I get here? Like, how in the world did I get from where I was before earlier, a long time ago, when I like had big dogs and was into sports and my dad made me hunt, to here where I am now? Like, What an odd, different set of events must have gone transpired, and especially with the dog. We had big dogs growing up, like we did big dogs, hunting dogs, and that's kind of the way that I was. It's the way that my family was. We were a big dog family. Part of the reason was because my mom was allergic to cats, and I think cats and dogs are on like two ends of the spectrum. And how I look at it is this. Now, not all dogs are like this, and not all cats are like this. So if you're a cat lover or dog lover or whatever, don't hate on me up here. I'm just trying to generalize really here so you can understand where I come from. And when you get home from a long day, a dog comes to you and is like so excited to see you. It's like, hey, I love you. I love you. I want to serve you. How can I help you? How can I be excited about you? You know, like that's a dog. That's what I feel when a dog, when you come home. And a cat, when you come home, it's more like, for the most part, what's up? What'd you bring me? I mean, that's just the way that I feel. And so much more of a dog person, big dog person. Now, Annabelle, our dog, our little bitty 13-pound Yorkie poo, she's kind of a cross between a dog and a cat. You get home and she's excited, but I don't think she's excited to see me. I think she's excited that I get to see her. Like, it's so good to see me, isn't it? It's so good to see me. You missed me, didn't you? See, that's what I feel with Annabelle. She's kind of a cross. And so it's been kind of a transition for me to kind of get into the small dog thing, to kind of really be able to love her. And if you know me now, I love Annabelle. I don't even know her name. Love that dog. I really do, and she's kind of taken a liking to me. In fact, whenever she feels like insecure, like there's a lot of people around, she doesn't really know what to do, she comes to me. She runs to me. But this is not the way that it always was. When I met Jennifer, she came with a Yorkie poo. Like, I would not have chosen to get the Yorkie poo. She came with the Yorkie poo, and that was okay, because Jennifer was so worth it. And I thought, Annabelle was really young, I thought the way that you train a Yorkie poo is the same way that you train a big dog. I knew no different, never had a little dog. I don't know if I knew they existed, but I thought that's, you train them the same way. And with a big dog, you know, they're really big and you got to get their attention, because they've got that attention span like Doug from Up, you know, it's like talking like, squirrel, what's going on? And so you have to get their attention. So sometimes you have to raise your voice really loud. Sometimes you got to swat them. Now, it's not like painful. It just, you know, it stings a little bit, and they know, oh, need to pay attention. Like, this is important right now. And so I thought that's what you do with little dogs. Apparently, that's not what you do with little dogs. And I didn't know this until one day. I came downstairs, and there was a big puddle of pee right there. And my first thought was, Jennifer, are you kidding me? No, that was not my first thought. My first thought was, Annabelle! And I remember screaming. I was so mad because I've trained her for so many months. You don't do that. Oh, really? And then I looked for her because I wanted to teach her a lesson. And I couldn't find her anywhere. I looked all over the house. Couldn't find her anywhere. And then I went to the closet. Like, we had this closet that we kept open where we kept her food and her cage, her little pink cage. And And I go in there, and Annabelle is in the very back of her little pink cage, and she's like cowering, and she's so scared. And I was like, oh. I mean, dude, right then my heart broke. I mean, like right then I began to love squirrels and all things little. Like, for real. And I just felt so bad. I felt so bad. And so from then on, like, I was different. I didn't act like that anymore. I didn't raise my voice the way that I did before. I didn't swatter like I did before. Like, training took on a whole new level with Annabelle. But what was really curious was that for months and months and months after that, still, if she'd go to the bathroom inside, cower, and she'd go run and hide. Even though that's not what I did anymore. And still, sometimes when I'd go to pet her, she'd kind of wince, like she was kind of nervous. And what I realized was that failure had become her identity. Like she felt like she was a failure. I mean, obviously, you know, the psychology doesn't work well with the dog, but like this was who she was. She was a bad dog. Annabelle was a bad dog. And what bad dogs get, no matter what, if they're good or they're bad, they get a swat. Like, that's who she was, and that's what she lived in. She lived in the failure that deserved punishment. And as I was thinking about that this week, I just recalled kind of the way that I felt so often in life. Like, I was defined by the sum of my failures. That I was a failure because I failed over and over and over again. Or sometimes it was just the last failure, or the greatest failure, the biggest failure, the worst failure. That's who I was. And so often with coaches and different instances in my life, when I failed, I got yelled at. When I failed, I got spanked or whatever it was. And so I had this identity that I was a failure. And now I have a guilty conscience, like always. I remember a couple times I got called into the principal's office, and I never did anything wrong because I was just terrified of doing something wrong. But I always was afraid that I was in trouble for something, even though I didn't do anything wrong. And still to this day, you know, someone, you know, will call me into their office, and I'll be like, oh no, what did I do? What I do, like it's gonna go bad. And like that's kind of my identity so often. And it's kind of residual, even though that's not who I am anymore. And I would imagine that a lot of us in here tonight have felt that way at least one time or another, that who you are is a failure and what you deserve is punishment. And you get kind of nervous about what's gonna happen. We're gonna talk about Peter tonight, and this is where we find Peter. When we find Peter at the very beginning in Luke chapter 5, when Jesus calls him, this is where we find Peter. Jesus comes to Peter, and he's fishing. He's in a fishing boat fishing, because that's what you do in a fishing boat. Jesus comes in the boat and he says, hey, let's go catch some fish. And Peter's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I was fishing all last night. There's no fish out there. And Jesus says, hey, let's try. So they do, and they haul in this just gigantic load of fish, just huge load of fish, this miracle amount of fish, miraculous amount of fish. And at that moment, Peter gets down and he says, get away from me, for I'm a sinful man. Now, when I first read that sounded odd to me. I don't know. If I were Peter, I'd be thinking, what up? Let's make this a habit, make some change. Come on, Jesus. We'll go out every night and I'll catch nothing. The next day we'll catch a load and we'll sell a ton of fish. But that's not what Peter did. He was like, get away from me, for I'm a sinful man. And I think we see in this identity of failure. What happened with Peter, one thing that we know is that all Jewish boys were trained in the rabbinical order. They had rabbis that trained them. They were trained in scripture, memorizing the first five books of the Old Testament. And at some point in their life, the rabbi would decide, okay, these group of boys are on the ball. They're awesome. I want you to continue following me. And you guys, you go home. I don't want you to follow me. I mean, you're not the best and the brightest. And so since we find Peter in the boat fishing, we know that he's been rejected by a rabbi, that he didn't get chosen to follow him any longer. And so now he's fishing. And we can tell with his response later to Jesus, when Jesus calls him to follow, that he jumps and he's like, yeah, I'm in. We can tell how much Peter wanted it. Like Peter had put his hope in that thing, or perhaps in himself, to do well and be able to follow a rabbi, but he got rejected. And so now he's fishing. And with Peter and the way that Peter is, I imagine he failed a lot. Here's the kind of guy Peter was. My dad describes people in one of two ways. And he shows me examples with him and my mom. And he uses a gun example. So if you don't know anything about guns, you may be lost. Okay, with a gun, you ready, and then you aim, and then you fire, right? That's what you do with a gun. Ready, aim at what you're supposed to shoot at, and then you fire at it. And two types of people. My dad, who is a ready, fire, aim. He's like, ready, fire, aim. You know, like he just goes. You know, just makes something happen, and then he kind of thinks about it. Then he kind of, so, you know, assesses the situation. And then my mom over here, who's a ready, aim. Aim. And that's kind of how she is. She uses logic. She thinks through things. She makes sure that it's the right decision. And sometimes she'll act on that after, you know, it's well thought through. It's well documented. She's gotten wisdom from a lot of different people. But my dad, dude, he goes out of his emotions. He goes out of what's inside. And Peter is the epitome of this type of person. I mean, he is legit gut reaction. Whatever he's feeling, he goes and he does. And he's like one of those guys that's just epic. Everything he does is epic. It's big. It's huge. Whether it's a success or it's a failure, it's epic. Epic big, epic failure. Epic good, epic bad. That's who Peter is. And so when he fails big time. And so this is who Peter is when Jesus finds Peter kind of lost his hope, kind of gun shy, kind of like Annabelle. And he's like, I'm a little bit nervous to hope because hope is a really dangerous thing. When you hope in something that fails over and over and over again, it's dangerous because it hurts you and you begin to build up walls. I've got a movie clip that I want to show you guys. It comes from The Shawshank Redemption, and it just really typifies this idea of hope. If you've never seen this movie, it's a really powerful movie, but there's this scene where the main character, Andy, played by Tim Robbins, he gets into this office where the loudspeaker is of this prison. He's in this prison, maximum security prison. And he plays on the loudspeaker this record of Mozart. And they're not supposed to, you know, be listening to Mozart. Like, prisons back in the day, they were way worse than prisons now. There's so many more opportunities in prisons now, things that you can do. And so back then, you know, there just wasn't anything. There was no hope. There was no anything. And so he you know, played this music and he loved it and locked the doors and the guards were trying to get in. Finally, they broke in, they beat him up and they threw him in solitary confinement. And this is where the clip picks up.
Maestro.
And you couldn't play something good, huh? Hank Williams or something?
They broke the door down before I could take requests.
Was it worth it? 2 weeks in the hall?
Easiest time I ever did.
There's no such thing as easy time in the hole.
That's right, a week in the hole is like a year.
I'm Mr. Mozart to keep me company.
So they let you tote that record player down there, huh?
It's in here. In here. That's the beauty of music. They can't get that from you. Haven't you ever felt that way about music?
I played a mean harmonica as a younger man. Lost interest in it, though. Didn't make much sense in here.
Here's where it makes the most sense. I need it so you don't forget.
Forget?
Forget that there are places in the world that aren't made out of stone, that there's something inside that they can't get to, that they can't touch. It's yours.
What are you talking about?
Hope.
Hope. Let me tell you something, my friend. Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane. It's got no use on the inside. You better get used to that idea.
When there's no point in hoping, it's dangerous. When there's nothing that you can set your hope on that's steadfast and secure, it's dangerous. I think about this in terms of relationships. And President Bush, he has this saying that he loves, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. If you hurt me, that's bad. But if you hurt me a second time, it's because I was dumb enough to stick around you. That's the point, is when you lose hope over and over and over again, you begin to build up walls and say, yeah, I'm not going to do this anymore. Mm-mm. I'm going to protect myself, because what happens, you hope in something, and then when you fall so much farther than you were before. It's like you're here and you hope, and then you're like down here, because just it's so hurtful. It's just so difficult. And so that's kind of where I imagine Peter is in his life at this point. But then Jesus says, hey, come follow me. And you can see like the hope kind of rises in him again. Like maybe perhaps this great rabbi performed this amazing miracle. Maybe I could follow after him. He wants me. And this is not an opportunity that he could pass up. And so he follows after Jesus. Over the next 3 years, Jesus builds great confidence in Peter, great hope in Peter. As Peter begins to see Jesus. I mean, first of all, he was rejected, and then Jesus, this amazing rabbi, calls him to follow him. That's pretty amazing in itself. And then he listens to Jesus teach, and it's like nothing he's ever heard before. Stuff that's just amazing, that's just mind-blowing. And then he sees all these miracles that Jesus does, healing the sick, casting out demons, calming the storm, feeding 5,000 people with just a couple of loaves and a couple of fish. It's amazing. Peter is there seeing it, watching it. And then it's like, Jesus is the Messiah. He's the guy that we have dreamed about, we have talked about, we have hoped for hundreds of years. He's the one who's going to restore all things. And he chose me for real. And not only did he choose me to be one of the 12, he chose me to be one of the 3. There were 3 guys that Jesus invited into special situations where he performed, you know, different miracles. Like he raised a girl from the dead one time. And then he was talking about the end times to these 3. He took them up on the mountain of transfiguration where Jesus was transfigured. Moses and Elijah shows up and God the Father speaks. And Peter got to go there. Could you imagine? He went from being a reject to being one of the 3 of the Messiah's father. I mean, legit. This is so cool. And you can kind of see it in Peter as his life works out. But you also see this one pattern in Peter's life. Ready, aim, fire. What he does, he reacts out of who he is, just in the instant, just goes. And if it's good, he reacts good. But then what happens is we see that Peter gets a chance to kind of think about things for a second, kind of evaluate the situation. And then he's like, oh no, well, mayday. And we see it, it reminds me of that cartoon, the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. It's like he's chasing the Roadrunner, and the Roadrunner builds up all this dust, and the coyote's following him, and all of a sudden, the Roadrunner, you know, the dust settles, and the coyote's still going, and he's like, hey, you're not on any ground. And the coyote looks down, he's like, and then he falls. But he doesn't fall when he doesn't know that he's, you know, not on the ground. It's when he sees that he's not on the ground, he's like, mayday, mayday. And then he falls. And I think this is Peter. Like he goes after these great things and he realizes, there's no one to catch me. What am I doing? And we see it best when he goes out and he walks on the water. He's in the boat with the disciples. There's a storm. This form is coming after them and they're all scared that it's a ghost. And then he says, no, no, it's me, Jesus. It's cool. And Jesus says, hey, Peter says, hey, Jesus, if it's really you, call me out there and I'm going to walk out on the water to you. Don't know why that was the proof that he thought was a good idea, but he did. And so Jesus says, come on out. And Peter's like jumping out of the boat. He's walking on the water and he gets a little ways from the boat, a little too far for the boat to save him, a little too far from Jesus for him to save him. And he's like, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. And the wind and the waves, and he starts sinking. He starts sinking, and then Jesus saves him, but that's kind of what Peter does a lot. We see this when Jesus takes the disciples to Caesarea Philippi. He takes them up to what they believed was the gates of hell. Like, this is where all the demons came from. This is where all the bad things came from. He was right there at the gates of hell, and he said, hey, who do you guys say that I am? And Peter steps at the plate and says, you're the Messiah. I mean, you're the one that's going to change all this. You're going to one who's take all this down. That's pretty bold. That's a pretty bold statement for a guy right there on the gates of hell. And then all of a sudden, Jesus starts explaining to Peter, hey, here's what Messiah really means. I'm going to have to go and die. And Peter has a chance to kind of think about it. He's like, whoa, if you die, that means I'm going to have to die. I'm not into that. That's not what it is. And so he rebukes Jesus. And it doesn't work out so well for Peter. And then Jesus takes him up to the Mountain of Transfiguration. And he, you know, just like we said before, he's transfigured before his own eyes. And it's amazing. And then Peter does this deal, and it always, every time I think about it, it reminds me of Brian Regan. He always talks about how he says stuff, and he's like these words, and they're out there, and he's like, oh, come back. Like, I wish I could take back those words. And that happens to me a lot. I say certain things, and I wish I could take them back, but you can't. And Peter does this. So he's in this glorious, miraculous moment. He's like, hey, Jesus, we should build some tents. This is awesome. And it's like, no, mayday. But this is Peter's life. You know, he jumps out on these great acts of faith, and then all of a sudden he's looking around like, oh, mayday, what am I doing? Hey, what am I doing? That was a bad idea. And this is kind of Peter's life as we go into the last night of Jesus' life. In the last night of Jesus' life, he starts to wash the disciples' feet. And this is a really degrading thing that Jesus is doing. So when he gets to Peter, Peter's like, no, you're not going to wash my feet. Are you kidding me? And Jesus says, hey, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part of me. So Peter's like, hey, wash my whole body. I want all of you. I want you to have all of me. I'm all in. Which I think becomes very significant in this next part when Jesus says, yeah, you know, guys, someone's going to deny me. Someone's going to betray me. I'm going to be arrested and everyone's going to fall away. And Peter says, not me. I'm in. Even if I have to go to my death, I will follow you. And Jesus says, really? Because tonight before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me three times. Peter says, no, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So they go to the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus takes Peter and a couple guys, the three, a little bit closer with him. And he asks them to pray. And Jesus goes off and prays, comes back an hour later, and they're asleep. But what's interesting is Jesus speaks directly to Peter when he comes back. He doesn't speak to the other two. He speaks just to Peter, and he says, Peter, could you not stay awake for an hour and pray? Could you not stay awake? I mean, you just said you want all of me. You want me to have all of you. You were all in. You just said that you're not going to deny me. You're not going to fall away from me, and you can't even stay awake for an hour when I need you. And about that time, the guards arrive with Judas as he betrays Jesus. And Peter pulls out his sword instinctively and cuts off a dude's ear. It's almost like Peter like kind of wants to make up for the mistake that he just made. He's just so bold and so brash. He's cutting off a guy's ear. And Jesus heals the guy and he says, hey, should I not drink the cup that the Father has for me, Peter? And then they go, they take Jesus away. And at that moment, all the disciples fall away, except for two, except for John and Peter. And they follow from a distance. And you can tell by what happens next that Peter has some time to kind of think about what he just did. Think about what's going on. Think about how far he's stepping out on faith because Jesus is getting arrested. He's going to be crucified. He's going to be put to death. And that means that he's probably going to be put to death along with Jesus because all rebel leaders were crucified with their followers, with their closest followers. And Peter, you couldn't get any closer than Peter. And so he follows Jesus to the trial. And John knows a guy, and so they get in. And then someone recognizes Peter and says, wait a second. You're one of those guys who followed Jesus. And Peter's like, no, wasn't me. That's not me. No way. He has kind of the shaggy response. It wasn't me. And then another person says, wait a second. Your accent betrays you. You're Galilean. You must be one of his followers. And Peter's like, no, it's not me. And then a third time, this guy who was the cousin of the man who got his ear cut off by Peter, his cousin says, wait a second. No. You were there. I know you're one of those guys. And at that moment, Peter says, I don't know the man. And right then, Jesus turns and he looks Peter right in the eye. And the rooster crows. And it's at that moment, Peter hears and he remembers. He remembers that Jesus says, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter was so avidly against that. And yet, he just denied Jesus three times. And I can almost feel the hope leaving Peter. The despair coming back. Good news, Jesus gets crucified and then rises from the dead. He appears to the disciples a number of different times, and we looked at those in the past couple weeks. And he appears this last time, this one time before the ascension. I want you to grab your Bibles and turn to John chapter 21, page 590. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one under your chair. If you don't have one at home, we'd love for you guys to take this home. You can have this. Page 590, John chapter 21. What happens is Peter decides, after Jesus has appeared a couple times, he decides he's going to go back fishing. He says, I'm going to go fishing. And then a number of guys go with him. But what I kind of hear in that is this. 3 years ago, Jesus called Peter out of fishing for fish, into fishing for men. But Peter's just had this epic fail. I mean, this fail like none other. And I can imagine he's thinking to himself, this is all I'm good for. I mean, there was big things for me, but this is all I'm good for. All I'm good for is fishing. He goes back at fishing. They don't catch anything. And in verse 4, it says, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? And they answered, no. And he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. And I hear just echoes of when he called Peter the first time. This is like deja vu. This happened before. And maybe something is starting to go off in their mind. And so they go out and they catch a bunch of fish. And then John says to Peter, it's the Lord. It's the Lord, Peter. And so what Peter does is he puts on his outer clothes because he was fishing, you know, without his shirt on, puts it on, jumps in the ocean to go after Jesus. And what we see is that what happened when Peter denied Jesus was not that his love for Jesus changed. Peter always loved Jesus deeply. And we see it in the boat. He knows it's Jesus and he goes after him. He doesn't even wait for the boat to get there. He dives in the water to go see Jesus. His love didn't change. But his hope failed him. They go into the shore. He helps bring in the fish. They eat the fish for breakfast. It's a great meal. And then Jesus calls Peter to himself. And what I imagine is going on in Peter's mind, at least if I were Peter, this is probably what I would be thinking. Here it comes. Here it comes. He hadn't said anything yet. He's appeared a number of times. But he hadn't said anything yet to me about, you know, what went down, you know, when he looked me in the eye and what I did, this is it. And I imagine he'll probably say something like, Peter, I had such high hopes for you, man. I had such high hopes for you. I called you out of fishing. I showed you such miraculous signs. My Father revealed to you that I was the Messiah. I took you up on the mountain of transfiguration. I had such high hopes for you. I had such high hopes for you. I was going to have you lead my disciples when I left. But you showed your true colors. And you denied me. When I needed you the most, you denied me. I had such high hopes for you. I imagine that's probably what Peter's feeling at this moment or some moment early on. But what does Jesus do? He says this, when they finished breakfast, this is verse 15, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to them, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And then Jesus says to him, feed my lambs. He says to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him a third time, do you love me? I imagine he's thinking back to the denial. He denied him three times. Jesus asked him three times, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And what I hear in this is Peter saying, you know. You know that I love you, but I'm just so weak. Like, I wanted so badly to follow you to death. I'm just too weak. You know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus says, feed my sheep. And he says, when you were a boy, you got to go wherever you wanted, but when you're older, someone's going to dress you and someone's going to lead you where you don't want to go. He said this signifying the death that Peter was going to die to glorify God. And then he said to Peter, follow me. And what I hear in this is Jesus saying, Peter, I know. I saw it. I was there. But you know what? You are not defined by the sum of your failures. You're not defined by your latest and worst failure. That's not who you are. I know that you have lost hope in yourself. But you can hope in me because I believe in you. I started a great work in you. I reconciled you. I forgave you. And I will finish the work that I started in you because I know that you're going to glorify me in your death. And Peter did. I know that you're going to glorify me in your death because I am finishing the work that I started in you. So Peter, follow me. You're not out of the game. Peter, I want you still, just like I did 3 years ago. And I want you to be on my team, doing my work on this planet, feeding my sheep, loving my sheep, serving my sheep. Peter, I want you. Can you imagine this moment? Can you imagine how this felt, how this went down, what was going on in Peter's mind, what was going on in his heart? I tell you what, man, this rings true with me because I have been there. I have felt this way so often. I am a failure. I can't succeed. I can't get rid of this sin in my life. I'm gonna go ahead and do it one time or another, so I might as well just give in because I'm a failure, and that's who I am. And Jesus says to me, just like he says to you, just like he said to Peter, the work I started in you, I'm gonna bring it to completion. And now I want you to be a part of what I'm doing. Last week we saw Thomas. This week we saw Peter. And they're two opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got the ready aim. You've got Thomas. You've got the ready fire aim. You've got Peter. Thomas, he thinks through things. He's logical. He makes good decisions based on facts. And Jesus meets Thomas where Thomas is, where Thomas needs him. And he infuses faith into Thomas because Thomas needs faith. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got Peter, who's all heart, man. He's just out there, just makes it happen. But he falls so often. And he needs hope. And what Jesus does is he infuses hope into Peter. He infuses faith and he infuses hope. And he does this because faith and hope are so closely related. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Faith and hope are intertwined. Faith and hope are knit so closely together. And he does this at this point because at this point, Jesus is getting ready to go away. He's getting ready to ascend into heaven. And he's leaving his disciples to do the work that Jesus was doing. He said, it's good that I go because you're going to do greater things than I've done. I'm going to fill you with my spirit and you are going to be the ministers of reconciliation because you've been reconciled. And that's what he says to us now. You've been reconciled. I want you to now be the ministers of reconciliation. You've been loved. So I want you guys to go share my love. You guys have been forgiven. So I want you guys to go share my forgiveness. I want you guys to go spread the good news. You guys, I want you. I want you. I want you. Your identity is not wrapped up in your failures. It's not wrapped up in your successes. Your identity is wrapped up in me. And I am secure. I am steadfast. I raised from the dead. And he wants to infuse faith. He wants to infuse hope because he wants to use us in mighty ways for his kingdom. And this just, it just blows me away about Jesus. Just that he always meets us where we are. No matter what side of the pendulum we fall on, he meets us where we are and he infuses us with what we need. He chose us, he redeemed us, he forgave us, and he wants to use us. And the way that we do that, the way that we continue to have faith and hope is we remember Jesus. We always go back to Jesus. Always go back to Jesus. We remember Jesus. And tonight we've got the great opportunity to have communion as a community. We get to take communion. And what communion is, it is remembering Jesus. On the last night when Jesus was betrayed, before he was betrayed, he took the bread and he broke it and he said, "This is my body." He took the cup and he said, "This is the blood of the new covenant." And he says, "Whenever you come together and you do this in remembrance of me." Paul adds to that later in scripture and he says, "Hey, if you're coming to the table because you're hungry, don't bother. If you're coming because you're thirsty, go do that at home. You've got food at home. If you're coming for the wrong reasons, if you're not coming to remember Jesus, if you're coming because you're worried about what your neighbor might think if you don't go, if you're coming for a number of other reasons, don't go." And this is my encouragement to you. If you want to remember Jesus, if you want to remember his death and resurrection, if you want to remember what he has done for you, then come take communion. You don't need to be a member of this church. We don't even have membership. You can be a member of another church. That's totally okay. If you're coming to remember Jesus, then come on. And if you're new here, if you're new to Jesus as a whole, and this is weird to you, this is strange to you, stay in your seat. Don't worry about it. No one's going to be looking around. No one's going to even know. And if they do know, they're not going to judge you. It's no big deal. If you don't want to remember Jesus, that's cool. That's totally cool. If you want to learn more about it, I'll be available afterwards. Come talk to me about it. I'd love to chat with you. But if you want to remember Jesus, come and take communion. We've got little crackers that resemble unleavened bread, and we're going to give you one of those, and then you can dip it in either the wine or the juice, and then take it. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, wow. Father God, you are so good to us. God, thank you so much that you have redefined our identity. God, thank you so much that you have redefined who we are. God, that we no longer are defined by our failures, but that we can find our hope in you. Thank you so much that you believe in us, that you know that you are gonna finish what you started. God, thank you for the faith and the hope that you infuse in our hearts, the work that you started in us, the work that you're gonna complete in us. Thank you so much. I just pray that you'd be with our hearts, you'd be with our minds as we come and take communion. God, that we would remember you. We would remember your sacrifice, the price that was paid for our forgiveness, for our redemption, that you paid it all. God, you're awesome. We need you. Open our hearts and our minds. And it is in your Son's precious name, Jesus Christ, we pray these things.